The most exciting way to catch a big peacock bass for me is on poppers. Nothing in freshwater, as far as I know, compares with explosion of a 20-pound peacock bass hitting a popper. It's like throwing a gas tank in the water, like this, boom. It's massive.
G'day and welcome to another installment of the Fly Fishers podcast.
Since 1967, we've been spreading the bug of fly fishing at our Melbourne fly shop.
Join us as we celebrate the fun of fly fishing and chat with characters that enjoy it as much as we do.
Whether you're just starting out or have some experience, we hope our ego-free commentary helps demystify fly fishing and inspires you to visit new places and try new techniques.
Welcome to the Fly Fishers podcast. Today we have a very special episode featuring Rodrigo Salas, a true pioneer in the fly fishing world, and one of his longtime clients and friends, Ray Malone. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Andrew. So, thank you very much for the invitation.
Ray, what you're holding, there's a microphone.
my apologies.
guys, it really is so great to have you here. I'll start with a bit of info on Rodrigo. He's the co-owner of Untamed Angling in South America and has traveled all the way from Brazil to join us here tonight. Rodrigo isn't just a fly fisher, he's a pioneer. His balls and determination have opened up some of the most remote parts of the Amazon to the fly fishing world, bringing species like peacock bass, dorado, and pacu into the spotlight. Without Rodrigo, these incredible fisheries would likely remain undiscovered. World-class operations such as Ken Jam Lodge, Pirarucu, Rio Marie, and Zingu Lodge are places you've probably seen featured in the Rise Fly Fishing Film Festival or on YouTube. If there's footage of fly fishing in the Amazon, chances are Rodrigo had something to do with it. We're very excited to have you here, Rodrigo, and thank you for fitting us into your holiday in Australia.
Thank you very much for the invitation again. It's a pleasure to be here.
How are you traveling? Are you a bit sleep deprived at the moment?
It's a long journey. We're doing a long journey. It's my off season. So Ray invited us, good friend that we met in the jungle, and I have made longtime friends in the jungle, and Ray, it's my Aussie mate.
Yeah.
It's my Aussie mate and invited me to come and enjoy a little bit of this incredible country here.
Yeah, and it's really thanks to Ray that we've got you here, I guess, because Ray has been a customer and friend of ours for some time, and we always enjoy his visits and stories from these adventures that he's doing with you. And we're just so grateful to you, Ray, for, I guess, putting the idea into Rodrigo's head to maybe come to Australia and spend a bit of time with us.
Well, the truth of it was that not last year, the year before, on my birthday, they made a big fuss in the jungle. It was crazy. And we all pinky shook on it. So then a year later, we had another crazy birthday.
He didn't have a choice.
No choice. No, I don't know.
He's spending birthdays with us in the jungle.
But Ray, you're someone that's, I guess, been pretty successful in your business life, and now you've retired and are living your best life and fishing the world. You've done some incredible destinations and fly fishing, but you obviously rate the stuff that Rodrigo here's got going on in the Amazon as some of the very best.
Well, to about it is, I just want an adventure. I'm only going to live once. I want a crazy adventure, and I want the opportunity to be in the right place in a safe, protected environment with those crazy fish. So yeah. I've been the last 3 years in the jungle. I was in Somani on the big dorado and pacu. I've been with Rodrigo at three of his other sites. I've been in Rio Marie twice, and it's been – if you want to put your life on absolute crazy steroids and really get right into it, that is the spot. It's the most the Rio Marie has the biggest peacocks in the world. Rodrigo has spent since the early 2000s. He's got all the indigenous people. He's got all the politicians and everyone. They all look after him. He's got the major leases on these incredible fisheries. He's got 800 Ks of water in there and just in the Rio Marie. And what it is, it's like five-star, super civilized safe jungle with just madness everywhere.
Yeah. So, you know, it's obviously you're looking for that more extreme flavor of fly fishing, and Rodrigo's really been able to offer that to you as a paying punter.
Well, it's just quality. So, you know, I've been going to New Zealand and we've got a lot of trophy fish over there, and I'd rather go there and spend my time on quality because that's what it's all about. So plus it's a great learning curve, and it's Rodrigo's seen over the last few years how you change as a fisherman, and they're just wonderful people. You feel like you're at home. The food's incredible. The people, the guides, everyone, they're just super cool. I've seen all these, you know, wild pumas and all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like Indiana Jones. If you had to put it like anything, it's like that. Crazy float planes. We're in the helicopters, you know, in Somani, and a 45-minute helicopter trip is like a 40-day hike into places that only a handful of people have had the privilege to go and fishing.
Amazing. Yeah. And we're going to get into a bit more detail on the various lodges and things that Rodrigo's got going on. But I want to go right back, Rodrigo. I want to know a bit more about you. What is it? Where did it start? What made you get that thirst for exploration early days?
Well, that's a very important and good question, because it comes right to the point where I am right now. It's going back when I was young. I grew up a lot with my grandfather. My grandfather was a real, true sportsman. In a moment in Brazil, in the jungles of Brazil, that was wild everywhere. And he was exploring all the time, new rivers, new spots. And I remember he took me with 12 years old to a very long camp trip into the jungle. And the first morning I woke up, I opened my tent and I saw a jaguar on the other side of the river looking to me. And somehow at that moment I feel so connected with the jungle and with the river and with all that kind of space that I didn't feel afraid. I feel comfortable. You say, that's what I
like. You're like a part of the environment.
I would like to do this. Mm. And I remember that I kept telling my grandfather that I would like to be a fisherman and catching fish my whole life. He said, no, you need to get a job. You need to go to the university, work, get some money. And then
familiar to me, actually.
and then you can travel all over the world because you'll be a successful businessman and things like that. Mm. Okay. I end up going to the university. I'm a civil engineer, environmental engineer. I work with construction and consulting projects for 15 years. And to make this story really short, I always love to fish. I get into fly fishing in a backpack trip with my brother in Chile. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with the jungle. And my first fish on the fly was a trout.
Wow. Yeah.
Not a jungle fish, because I fish in the jungle with my grandfather with the spinning, you know, with spoons and lures and things like that. At that moment in Brazil, fly fishing was almost non-existent. And then I got into the fly fishing. I came back from that backpack trip to Chile. I sold all my spinning gear to just one fly rod and reel. And from that 6-weight fly rod and reel, I caught lots of different jungle species. And I say, I would like to do that my entire life.
Yeah.
And then got to the university, got a really great, really good business there. And in 2004, I met Marcelo in Argentina. He was just starting a project called La Zona. It's a tailwater fishery out of the Salto Grande Den in Uruguay River, border between Argentina and Uruguay. And he was with the vision of create a very exclusive fishery there for monster dorado, world record size dorado, that is swimming close to the big dam. And we got friends, and that was the start of the company. And from there on, we didn't stop one single minute. chasing and looking for the most incredible, crazy places in South America. We adventured to down south to Patagonia for sea run brown trout in some small river, crazy rivers. But then Seychelles, we did something in Seychelles back in 2008. But then we look and say, our essence is where we grew up.
Mm.
That's the jungle. And there's still so many places that are untouched in the Amazon jungle in South America that why not? Why not discover these places and create world-class operations there? And as I grew up, I saw the decline of many rivers in South America because of agriculture, big projects, hydroelectric plants, and people, you know. And I said, there will be places that are still untouched, for sure, in the Amazon jungle. And there are basically the natives' lands. The natives' lands in the Amazon jungle, they are still protected and untouched. And we said, we need to find a way to see how these people in the jungle are living. And if there's a sustainable economic way, we can help them with the fly fishing tourism.
Mm.
We discover Simane in Bolivia, and then we discover Rio Maria in Brazil, Kenjan. And basically the model is a joint venture. It's a partnership, 50-50 with the natives, very clear. As same as any business, when you have a partner in your fly shop, you're 50-50. You take care of something, they take care of other things. And with the natives is the same.
Mm-hmm.
They are the landowners. We are the company that provides the facilities, the marketing, sales, operation, and we are true partners. That model was completely groundbreaking in Brazil and Bolivia. And even the politicians, they said, we don't have a law for that. We don't have a regulation to allow a private company make a joint venture and associate with the natives associations, you know. And then they need to create a law for that.
Yeah.
Because the natives want that. Because they saw that was a potential for them to have a better quality of life, keeping those places pristine.
Yeah.
Protected through...
And their culture alive, you know.
Long-term fly fishing projects. There were few people every season, keeping small, you know, different than other kinds of tourism. For example, lots of NGOs try to help the natives to create their ecotourism programs. But then again, it's a lot of people entering their areas, and the ecological footprint of that, it's big. The fly fishing, it's very small groups in a very short season.
Mm.
But the value of that is huge for the natives, and they can improve a lot their quality of life. And the quality of life for the natives is not different for us. They want good education, good health system, clean water, good energy, transportation, that's it. But keeping in the jungle, living in the jungle, in their villages. And that's what we try to understand more and learn with them and try to help them how we can provide it. And those, it was a long way. We are completing this year 20 years.
Wow.
We hosted our very first international client in February 2005.
Okay.
So we're just completed 20 years.
Was it a slow burn to start with? Did it take a little while for things to really get going for you guys? Or was the demand there straight away?
No. The beginnings were really hard, really slow because, again, we are opening a window in the fly fishing that's completely different than other stuff. It's pretty much like you have here in Australia, all these crazy different species you have in saltwater and even in freshwater. But the fly fishing started with the trout, salmon, then you go to saltwater, tarpon, bonefish, permit. And we were suddenly opening the gates for crazy jungle species that most people never heard about. Okay, Dorado, there was just starting in Argentina, some in Brazil. And then we put the largest Dorado that you can catch on a fly rod. Because
before that, people were going to Patagonia to fish for trout. They then extend their fishing trip a couple of days to go to Corrientes to catch some Dorado in the Paraná River. But they say, oh, it's a really fun, go-looking, jumpy fish. And then we show that, no, it's not only a fun fish. It's a crazy top predator of the South American rivers. And they can reach 60 pounds, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So it was, in the beginning, it was very, very slow. But once people start to see what we are doing, creating world-class operations, exclusive places, and crazy fishing.
Sounds like you had to convince people not just to come fish with you, but also that the species that were on offer were worth coming to catch.
Yes.
At that, in those early days. Where now
in the early days, yes.
Yeah. Where now we think, oh, peacock bass, well, yeah, they're a
very
viable fly target that, you know, we all travel and try and catch. But you were very much at the grassroots with the development of that in
for,
a way.
For many jungle species, yes, that's for sure. That's no doubt. And again, there's still people that say, oh, that is safe to go to the jungle, you know. And it's fun because I say that our worst competition are basically Nat Geo and Discovery Channel showing all the tritons and crazy stuff that can happen with you in the jungle, giant anacondas that it will eat you, thousands of mosquitoes or the giant crocs and things like that. And it's true, obviously, if you're going alone in the jungle, it's not easy. It can be dangerous. So we try to have world-class operations, lodges, facilities, well-thought logistics where people can really enjoy a really remote, pristine location, but with a safe and comfortable way.
Yeah, you know? Amazing.
Yeah.
Is there any trip during those early days and certainly probably destinations that you currently offer that really stood out? Was there something that you... a place you went where that you were just like, oh my goodness, this is next level good. We can start something here. Was there a standout one for you?
Oh, I think Bolivia was one of those because changed the way completely how to catch Dorado on a fly rod. Again, most of Dorado in South America, you fish from a boat in a big river, sometimes muddy water, blind casting. And then we found out rivers that flows from the Andes Mountains to the Amazon watershed. Very clear, crystal clear, you know, with giant Dorado, you know, where you can fish wet wading, sight fishing.
Yeah.
Well, it's all sight fishing. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah. Crazy thing, yeah. You know.
For me, on the surface, as just someone that consumes a lot of fly fishing media, it wasn't until I saw people catching big Dorado in crystal clear water that looks like a trout stream that I suddenly woke up and thought, oh my goodness, I've got to get to South America and do that. That's something that is a bucket list trip for me. Did you, once that stuff was being broadcast, did it just explode for you?
Yeah. The interest? Simone was exactly the moment when our company turns out in something different. You know, and when we fished those waters for the first time, say, this is crazy, but we have no idea how to create an operation long-term there because it's so tough, the logistics to get there, even the river, how to work on that. We tried cataract, we tried aluminum jon boats, and then we ended up with dugout canoes from the natives because they're the best. They're the best for that river.
Yeah,
so we no had no clue, no idea. But then we learned with the natives, and that's one of the most remarkable and valuable things for me, is working with the natives. It's not only have this equitative level of work, but also you learn a lot with them.
Yeah,
a lot. And obviously they learn a lot with us. So it's a two-way joint venture. And we learned so much with those natives, how to understand the nature, how to catch those fish, how to run everything in the river and the logistics. And then when we started to see money, it was like a boom. I remember that I was in charge for, at that moment also, for all sales of the company. It was like phone ringing all the time, and then there's magazines and things like that. So lots of clients wanted to come and say, okay, this is really special. We knew that was really special, but we didn't visualize how that we will come into the market and into the fly fishing market, especially client-wise, because again, we are selling trip to Bolivia. At that moment, who was going to fish in Bolivia, you know? But this place it's crazy, crazy.
It's so crazy that I was there, and the team from National Geographic were there documenting everything. And Thomas Pichak, he's one of the best in the world. And he said at the end of the week when I was there that it's the most pristine place that he's ever been to anywhere in the world. And he's in the poles, you know, he's always down Elephant Island, all these crazy places, Galapagos and everything.
Mm.
And he said it was just the most absolutely pristine, crazy, crazy place where he'd go snorkeling in a pool and there'd be huge Dorado, like monsters, and then crazy big Maturo, and then you get a tapir will come in, and he's got this photos in his last National Geographic of the tapir's head out of the water with the little hairs, and then there's a little bird above these hairs, and there's insects buzzing around in the hairs. And one of the photos, the bird's got it in its mouth. You know, the place is a crazy, crazy place.
Yeah. Do you remember when your first trip over there was, Ray?
My first trip was 4 years ago now, I think.
Yep.
And it was into Somani.
Yep.
So I found
it. Had you seen some of that footage? Was that what grabbed you to get you there to start with? Do you remember what it was that precipitated a trip?
No, the main thing that got me there is that I started an Instagram account so I could check out people's catch rates and sizes and the terrain and all those things. And it just looked absolutely mad because, you know, these Dorado, there's instances where they'll get the bait fish and they'll just smash them and they'll just eat it right there at your ankles, and the place is crazy. And it's all about sight fishing. So the first trip, my biggest was about 25, but I had, you know, fish that were 40, 45 pound, you know, rolling over my fly, and I couldn't hook them. It was very difficult. They got hard mouths.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then the next year, absolutely smashed it with crazy things. And those Paku, just one of the best fish in the world, you know. For the people who catch big trigger fish, they're just like a big trigger, but 30 pound, you know, and they're just crazy. So
crazy.
This episode was proudly brought to you by Untamed Angling, wild places, world-class fly fishing experiences, and Tumut River Brewing Co., beers as crisp and refreshing as the Tumut River itself. Is it, you know, I obviously haven't been to these places, but is it safe to say that there's enough easy fishing there to satisfy you, but at the same time there's always the challenge of the bigger fish, and they're harder to get, but they're there and worth putting the effort in?
Oh, yes.
Or are those easy fish actually not there? Is there easy fishing there as well?
Super easy.
Yeah.
So I hadn't been fly fishing, that type of fishing, for very long. I'd only caught trout in my younger days and a bit up in Weipa, caught some permit and stuff and did really well. But over there is just another world. And you could, in a day I got 7 Paku because I targeted them. And you're talking really big, crazy fish.
Yeah.
And I worked out how to get them. And the guides are so good. And these guys know absolutely everything. So that's the good thing, you know. There was one guy, an elderly gentleman, he was in his 80s, and the guides, they picked up the chair, put it next to the river for him, and even he caught some Dorado. So it's about the passion for it, and the place is, there's so cool a fisherman there. And what I really loved about it as well is I met some guys, and then they were friends of Lance Peterson on the rooster fish. So they put me under Lance, and it's like a big network. Mm. And then you end up knowing all these really cool anglers. And if you're going to do it, you might as well do it full on. And these guys are, like, in my opinion, and I don't know everything, but in my opinion, they're absolutely first class, best in the world, and it's just quality.
Yeah, so, extreme location, extreme fish, and extreme people that undoubtedly end up at places like your lodges.
Yeah. to find also the guides and people to work in those places, not easy because they need to spend like 6 months in the jungle, you know. There's no days off.
Yeah, I can imagine it'd be hard work for them.
Yeah.
How would you describe a paku to an Australian?
Well, some people would say that's our jungle permit. I don't like comparisons because I love fish for permit and it's one of my favorite fishes in saltwater. But yes, it's a fish that you sight fish all the time. They're big round, they are omnivorous fish, so they can eat a small fruit or flower that falls in the water, but they can eat also a nut, they can eat a small fish. So they eat it all. They're omnivorous fish. But they at the same time can look at your fly like this and say, no.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
So later shy.
Yeah. And turn again. But sometimes you put your dry fly in the surface and they come and boom.
Smash it.
And run your backing all the way downstream. It's a crazy fish. It's a crazy fish. And in the jungle, we have many different species of paku.
Mm.
For example, in Kenjan, we have three different species of paku, smaller, but it's species that you can catch with a 5-weight and a dry fly.
Yeah.
With a fat Albert, the same flies they're fishing for trout in New Zealand or anywhere in the world, and you're catching a paku, a version of paku that jumps out of the water.
Yeah.
Jumps like a bullet out of the water. You fish, sight fishing upstream in runs and rapids. Yeah. Just like a trout. Yeah. And that's the cool thing of the jungle. You can use and you can apply a lot of techniques of trout, salmon, and even saltwater to all these species. Obviously, we adapt everything and now we have our own techniques, our own everything that we created around the jungle. But for an angler that never did the jungle before, you can do it with the same techniques you're fishing in saltwater or even trout salmon fishing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ray, I remember, I think it was probably 2 years ago, you came into the shop and you were telling stories of your trip to Somani. And I remember you looking at me and saying, Andrew, you don't understand. It's crazy shit. Man, it's crazy shit.
I think the actual term was batshit crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I'll give you an analogy. Yeah, if you go and put a Chernobyl ant on, if you're fishing, you know, like that little foam little fly, there they use 3-inch Chernobyl ants.
Like this.
Yeah.
And on the paku, you'll have a 40-pound leader, and then you'll have about 10 inches of 40-pound. Wire
tip.
And these things, they've got a teeth like us. You pull their
molariform back,
and they look like a person, like a human. But underneath, they've got the pointy ones down the bottom. They're part of the piranha family.
Okay, because I guess they're similar proportion, aren't they?
So, yeah.
And these crazy things, you hook them, and they just don't stop. I've had them just that 40-pound is just gone. And we only fish 8-weights. That's all you're fishing on really big, crazy, crazy, crazy fish.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's sight fishing. You're sight fishing all those paku. And I had spots where they were sitting just in front of the rapids and it was quite a long cast to get them and you just put it a meter in front and they just smashed me. But most of the fish, you don't need to be brilliant caster.
No, it's not a long cast.
Not at all. It's really, really cool.
No.
It's different. It's another world.
Amazing.
And the main thing I felt was that's creation. You know, that's what is everything in life.
Mm.
So if you want to see something that's how it was made and it's been living there in an ecosystem for millions of years and it's all the same as it used to be, that's it.
Yeah,
Places. These pristine places, one day they won't be there anymore.
You're going to enjoy it while they're there.
Well, it's just
it's
the most addictive thing. It's the most addictive. Like imagine getting in the helicopter 8 o'clock in the morning. You've had your breakfast. You had like it's all 5-star. It's full on. And then you get in the helicopter. And then 30 minutes later, you're dropped into the land the world forgot.
Mm.
And there's nobody anywhere near you on anything. there's just you, another angler, and you've got your guide, and then you've got a native guide.
It's real wilderness, isn't it? Yeah.
And it's crazy.
Rodrigo, what other species, you know, we've obviously ticked off three there, being Dorado, peacock bass, and Paku. What other species might one catch in the Amazon?
Oh, there are many. There are many. And talking about basically Dorado and peacock bass, probably they're the top two.
Yep.
You know, they're really different.
Mm.
In the ways you fish for them and things like that, and each one it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And, but there are many others, and I reckon that you can go from a very shy species of Paku that you catch with dry flies. They can look into your fly and refuse your fly like an old brown trout.
Mm.
You know, it's just like that. They look and say no, and then you need to match their hatch in the jungle for a Paku species. Then you have Matrincha, that for me, it's our jungle trout, because also they are super shy and they live just like a trout, eating insects, nymphs, and things like that. And you're trout fishing in the jungle. Basically the same.
But they go harder.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, they jump a lot. Yeah. No, good. They jump a lot. They take your backing straight away in a 5-6 weight rod.
Mm.
No doubt. They take your backing straight away, jump a lot. It's probably pound by pound one of the strongest fish I ever caught in freshwater.
Yeah,
no doubt, the Matrincha. Then you have a monster Arapaima that can reach up to 400, 500 pounds. It's the biggest freshwater scale fish in the planet. They come to the surface, they roll, they take air from the surface. And they look like a jungle prehistoric tarpon, and it's a leviathan. It's crazy to hook one of those monsters, and then you realize that you have a freight train in the end of your line. You know, and they leap, they jump, they can go harder, they can go to the structure, and it's an unbelievable challenge in the jungle for me.
And they taste good.
Oh, yeah. They taste really good. And they were in danger.
Yeah.
The Arapaima in the 80s.
Because Ray likes eating them.
Yeah. Before that, much before that, the Japanese went there to kill the... Yes. We had really trouble with the Arapaima populations in the Amazon jungle. Mm. And in the 80s, some people trying to protect them, they push hard with the government to create some preserves, natural reserves for protection of the Arapaima. And the biggest one is the Mamirawa Reserve. That's where the largest and the most population of wild Arapaima lives in the Amazon. And that was created in the 80s, that reserve. And it's in the confluence of the Amazon River with another big river, and create like a marshland, flooded land, jungle. Crazy place, millions of birds and bait fish, and where all the Arapaima, they enter that complex of lakes, channels, and rivers to feed and spawn. And that was the first of a kind, and then the government replied many other reserves, and now the Arapaima is not anymore in danger because they were a commercial target fishing, you know, or big commercial fishing in the Amazon. And yeah, they taste really good.
The Japanese are pretty good when it comes to food, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Especially fish.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yellowfin tuna, not bad. Yeah, so are there these fisheries, you're always getting a crossover with multiple species. Talk to us a little bit about the different fly fishing operations that you have.
Yeah, what we aimed is to have the best on each class in the jungle. We just talked with Simone, is the pinnacle for Dorado fishing in South America. The next, our goal is to find the largest peacock bass in the world. And we found Rio Maria.
Mm.
Rio Maria, it's a unbelievable place where you can catch really monster peacock bass. It's a river that's entirely inside indigenous land, and from the headwaters to the mouth, entirely inside indigenous land. And the natives, they live in the mouth of the Maria River with the Negro River, which is the largest river there. And the whole area inside the Maria River, nobody lives there. And I'm talking about 800 kilometers of fishable water.
Wow.
So now Rio Maria is the largest sanctuary for giant peacock bass in the whole Amazon. And for me personally, that's one of the most crazy places in the world, because peacock bass for us in South America, it's one of the most emblematic sport fish, you know. And if you have a place that you can catch consistently 20 plus pound peacock bass, it's off the records. Other places you catch 120 plus pound in the season, it's wow. It's a monster. It's something, is the fish of the season. And then we found a place that you can catch many in the week.
Wow.
So
I got four and in a week.
Yeah.
In there over 20.
Oh, like, wow.
No, that's fantastic. And we got a double that was a monsters.
Double 22, 23 pounders. In Rio Maria, we established and I think we put the bar higher in terms of fly fishing for peacock bass. And then we need to develop new ways to catch them, new techniques, because it's not your average size peacock bass. They can explode the fly line. They break everything.
Rods, they smash everything.
And it's probably is the biggest challenge we have in the jungle in terms of fly fishing, because you can go prepared, but you always surprise it. If there's one fish in the jungle that I'm not comfortable that I will land it, and I have many years in the jungle, is a big peacock bass.
Yeah.
Because they can ruin your life.
They're the king out there.
They can smash you.
Smash you.
And you don't not even know what happened, you know. So they're pretty special. And then we have 800 kilometers of fishable water there where we can target them. And peacock bass is not a migratory fish. Mm. It's a territorial fish. So the way you run all the fishery, it's really important. And resting and letting this fish rest for weeks, it's really important. That's why we, instead of building a land-based lodge, we decided to build a floating lodge, a mothership that can navigate all over these 800 kilometers, and we access with a float plane. So every day you are fishing in a new area, and every week we are fishing in a new zone of the river. So it's pretty diverse. And with that, we can really have a consistent trophy peacock bass fishing all over the season.
It's time for a short break to talk about the legends who bring this podcast to life. Our committed team at The Fly Fisher prepare, record, and edit in-house in South Melbourne. We put huge effort in for you listeners. We hope that means when it comes time to make a fly fishing purchase, you consider us. With your loyalty, we can keep producing these podcasts and bringing you the world's best fly fishing gear. So shop smart and support the fly shop that supports you. I'm hearing a bit of a common theme here. It's been something that I've thought long and hard about, but fly fishing operations and travel operations, they really need to toe that fine line, don't they? Because there's the sustainability of business, and then there's the sustainability of the fishery.
Of the environment.
And the two totally are intertwined, you know?
Totally. You can look into only to the business side, and, oh, let's put more anglers here, or let's scale this operation and blah, blah, blah. But then the fishing starts to.
It does.
It does.
Every time.
I haven't seen that many times all over the world. And what we try to do, it's keep it small, keep it protected, keep it exclusive, you know. It's like Rio Maria. It's 800 kilometers of water, fishable water, that we fish 20 weeks of the season only. And in a week, we cover more or less 80 kilometers, something like that. So we have a lot of time to rest in the fishing areas just for a small group of people.
Mm.
And that's it.
So when clients come on your trips, you probably wouldn't realize, because you just see the trip and an advertised price, but you're paying basically for that exclusivity, aren't you? Knowing that you're going somewhere that has limited numbers of anglers each year.
You are, but the thing that you get is you just get value everywhere. Because the quality of the food and the quality of what you're drinking and where you are and your accommodation and everything, it's just, it's insane. It's like you have a five-star in the middle of the jungle. It's just crazy. Mm. Yeah, so that's what I really like it too. I don't like roughing it too much. So
yeah. And Ray, you've more recently taken your better half, Rachel, with you on these adventures too. Hey?
I did. Yeah. And here you go. This is a good thing, actually. Rachel went first time, not this year that she's gone, but the year before.
The year before.
And she caught a monster peacock. Mm. And she'd been fly fishing for 2 years. And the only one that really taught her how to cast was me, and I'd be always on a case. And and then what's happened is she's just really got great line control, smashes them. It's all by hand. She went to this last year. She went to Piraruku and catching a big arapaima, and she got a 1.9 meter fish, and.
She'd be only 1.5 meters, wouldn't you? In stature.
She bloody hand stripped it because she saw me hand stripping all the time. So she's really cool. And she ended up in Catch Magazine, didn't she, Rodrigo, in the States?
With the monster peacock bass.
Yeah, with this crazy peacock.
So Rodrigo, do you get a few couples that are maybe don't have a non-fishing companion?
Yes. Yeah. That's something that we try to always look after it, because the jungle is not only the fishing or the fish.
There's so much more.
It's so much more. Mm. And as we work with the natives, there's this cultural aspect of the natives of the jungle, of the Amazon. There's really cool to be with them, to learn something. Probably Kenjan is one of the most emblematic places that you can have this kind of experience, because the Kayapo natives are one of the most proud, emblematic natives of the Amazon, still living body painted, hunting with their cubs, with bows and arrows. Mm. And that experience transcends the fly fishing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Getting with them in a jungle, in a track, in the middle of the jungle, and learning with them what they know, from there, it's a crazy adventure in terms of a known fly fishing program. And then we establish that as well and create possibilities to people to experience that.
Yeah.
Well, what I found every time I've been, there's been people there on eco tours as well. So last year, saw a harpy eagle. They're the most isolated eagle. They live on their own. It's crazy stuff. We were in one spot, and there was a bit of a hill on the other side, and these three little giant otters had worked their way down to the water. Mm. And then the two parents come down, and then in between, like that's say 40 meters away, in between, a freshwater dolphin, not the pink ones, but one of the gray ones, has just come up like that. And then so I've got these, crazy giant otters, and then I've got a
dolphin.
Bloody dolphin there, So it is really seriously nuts. If you're into eco, at Kenjam, it's very civilized because there's no mosquitoes hardly. There's hardly any sandflies. I don't think sandflies exist, actually. No. It's the civilized jungle. And then when you're in Rio Marie, because it's got all the tannin and it's the pH is acidic, the insects hate it. No. So you're not getting smashed with insects. No. So it's really, really cool. You get some like eyelicker bees and stuff, and they're a bit annoying, but nothing's biting you. It's not terrorizing you. It's fantastic.
Okay. Rodrigo, for us in Australia, we're going through a bit of a cost of living crisis at the moment, and travel has really gone through the roof, especially.
Same in South America, yeah.
Yeah, really, same everywhere. Yeah. Is there a price range that you guys offer in terms of different packages, like some destinations that are maybe a little bit more affordable than others?
Yes. We always try to balance that. And obviously, it's all related also with experience and also the logistics, Having a full-time helicopter in the jungle is not cheap, The same thing, it's flying 3.5 hours with a Grand Caravan float plane and landed right by the side of the mothership. In the middle of nowhere, it's also not cheap, So it all depends on the logistics, where we are. And mostly we're really remote places. And again, it's because these places are so remote, they're so special and so protected and so pristine. But I think sincerely that we are pretty reasonable and fair with the rates we charge for the trips compared with other fly fishing trips around the world. You see,
well, I think it's super cheap.
Yeah,
in reality, it's actually cheap. So on the Rio Marais, it was about 8,500-9,000 US, and it's 5-star crazy. Obviously, you've got to get there, and there might be some other little costs here and there, but it was fantastic. In Somani, they've got 2 helicopters servicing that area, and that's more expensive. But for what you have, it's not expensive at all, you know. So,
yeah.
You know,
for what you're saying, Ragas, even if it is only that once-in-a-lime trip, still do it, you know. But if you do it once every 2 years or once every 10 years,
but what will happen,
it's better than not going
Andrew,
at all.
Andrew, I believe, is once you go there, you're going to keep going there. Because like, I spent probably 6 weeks in the jungle last year, you know. It's just so crazy, crazy addictive.
Unreal. Look, I think we've done pretty well there. We've covered most things. Is there anything else you want to add, Rodrigo?
I remember another crazy species that we have in the jungle that probably – I mentioned that the jungle, we have the big four. Like in Africa, hunting, it's they talk about the big four in Africa and hunting. And the fly fishing in the jungle, we have the big four. That's basically the peacock bass, the dorado, the arapaima. And the last one that complete this big four list is the payara, the vampire fish. This is a crazy species. They have these 2 giant fangs. They live in deep pools of the Amazon rivers. And it's one of the most amazing sport fish you can catch on a fly rod. And again, we started from scratch. There's no people doing that before, and techniques and flies and how to catch them. And it's pretty much one of the most cool things and that passionate me more in the jungle is to open those gates. Because in fly fishing, you read a lot about trout and salmon and saltwater, but in the jungle, you need to do by yourself and you need to create your techniques. You need to learn with the natives and adapt a lot of things. And the newest one for us is the payara. That we are understanding how to fish for them, how to catch them on the fly, their behavior. They live in deep pools, but suddenly they come to the surface, smashing bait fish on top, and you catch them on poppers. Crazy, crazy looking fish, jumps a lot, fights a lot, so hard. That's why we open an exclusive operation just for the payara in the Xingu River. That's the Xingu Lodge. That's our newest operation in Brazil. And I think this is a fish that still have lots of people, you know, interest, but see, wow, this is weird looking. This vampire fish.
They are crazy, weird looking, aren't they?
But they are so good to catch on the fly rod, and there will be much more coming.
For you, it doesn't stop your tapping into new fisheries more and more. And I guess now you've got a bit of respect by the indigenous communities as much as you do the angling fraternity that are booking these trips. So they trust you. You know, and I have no doubt that whatever you touch will be a success because your track record speaks for itself.
Thank you. And I think the natives trust us because we are fair and we work in a very transparent, honest way with them. We are 50-50 with them. And all of our operations in both in Bolivia and Brazil, they're audited by the Brazilian government, the Bolivian government. They see everything. We clear accounts with the natives every season. So it's a way that we are taking care of them and they taking care of the place. And we are all, through the fly fishing, taking care of a big portions of the Amazon jungle. If we sum all of our operations, both in Bolivia and Brazil, we are protecting more or less 15 million hectares.
Wow, you know? Geez, it's a big area, isn't it?
It's a big area. And it's because of the fly fishing that those areas are protected. Because if those natives don't have a sustainable economic way of living, you know, they will be looking after other stuff to do. Logging, illegal gold mining.
Poachers.
Commercial fishing, you know. Yeah. So it's through the fly fishing that those places are protected. And that's a part of our business that it's, for me, it's one of the most important in terms of legacy.
Yeah. No, and you should be proud of that, mate. I am. Really, you know, it's an incredible model. That it would be great if it were more widely adopted by other companies too. I think the
saltwater
destinations could really learn from what you guys are.
And you can reply that model with the natives anywhere.
Sure.
You
know? Yeah.
But you just need to learn how to work with them, be fair, take care of them, and then you can create some really pristine places that we will keep for the future generations.
Mm.
What the future generations will see in this planet, I don't know.
Mm.
But we are trying to help somehow.
Yeah. Well, I think you could see, you know, hopefully on camera there, Ray, your passion around just how unbelievable these destinations are. It sounds to me almost too good to be true, but you
are. Well, you've seen the photos.
Yeah. I've seen all
and
the photos.
You've already covered in for and a cup of tea and
yeah,
banging on about
yeah. that. But I think the species that you have on offer there are real game fish that everyone ought to experience at least once, you know. And I certainly hope that one day maybe
you will
welcome me.
We will. We will, my friend. For sure.
For sure.
We are in the camera.
Yeah, I've got you on record now, mate. But look, I really do appreciate you sitting down with us on the podcast. Ray, thank
my
you
My pleasure,
again, mate.
My pleasure. Yeah, absolute pleasure.
Yeah, putting a headlock around him and bringing him to Australia.
No, we've got him here. Which is
oh, yeah. Drinking really good wine.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic wine.
Ray has very good taste. Yeah, yeah. Anyways.
And doing some crazy fishing as well.
And we've of course got you doing a little presentation down on the shop floor in a few minutes. So we're going to hang up on this podcast and head down there for a cold beer. And it'll still be a good beer, Ray, but it probably won't be as good as your red wine, mate.
Well, it's actually
the only thing that I drink in all those days was wine. So I'm waiting for a beer now.
No, it's the Negronis.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah, yeah.
That's next level.
I can imagine. Yeah, look, really, thank you guys again.
No, thanks you for the opportunity to be here.
And to all the listeners of the Fly Fishers podcast, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. Cheers.